understanding of your own physical limitations, and you know what you can make your body do. Fire eating is the same way. Your body can withstand higher temperatures than you think it can.
From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Carissa Hendricks began learning magic at an early age and progressed to being a highly respected magician and variety artist. They have created many stage personas and will visit Columbus on March 16th and 17th as Lucy Darling, a sparkling performer who delivers a show full of magic, mischief, and mayhem. If you're thinking of attending, act quickly because these tickets are going fast. Welcome to Craft, Carissa Hendricks.
Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. I've really enjoyed your videos online as Lucy and thought that it looked like a great time. So what got you into magic as a young person? That's not something that a ton of people do.
I've always loved magic just since I was very little. And I think my relationship with magic from the very beginning was this idea of trying to figure it out. Lots of people come into magic that way. And those people fall into two categories eventually. Either they hate magic because as you work with magic, you learn there's just some things you're never going to figure out. And if that's a joyful experience for you, then you become a magician. And if that's a terrible experience for you, you become somebody who hates magic. Those are the only two categories of the tinkerers when they watch stuff. And for me, I loved it. I love when I can't figure something out. I love the game of trying to figure something out. I love the game of thinking of a magic trick in my head that doesn't exist yet and then trying to figure it out. That's a total joy. But the first half of my career, I didn't really feel like there was a place for me in magic. So I focused on sideshow and circus and comedy. And as I progressed, as I did more theater, I noticed more and more magic finding its way into my show. I ended up pendulum swinging all the way to the other side and doing a straight up magic show. Now I like to think that the show is much more of a true variety show, especially the one we're doing in Columbus with Sarah. There's singing, lots of clown bits, lots of comedy, lots of improv, lots of different kinds of variety. And you can see my whole breadth of my career in it. So, yes, it is a magic show. Yes, I love magic. But if you're going to it thinking it's a traditional magic show, you will be surprised.
Speaking of which, you do, among many other things, the hammering a nail into your nose illusion, something that bothers me every time I see it. I know it's a trick, but it bugs me. Have there been things like that that you've looked at yourself and said, nah, I'd prefer not to do that because it's,
Ooh.
painful or unappealing or something else? Because, like, again, I know it's an illusion, Michael, if you've got the Arrested Development thing going in your head like I do.
Love it.
But it's not, I don't know how you do it, but it bothers me every time I see it.
So that's interesting because that trick is called Blackhead. It falls under the category of tricks that are in the realm of sideshow. And sideshow is this very interesting stepchild of magic where you really are hammering a nail into your face. That part is real. But the part that is the trick is that you have a deep understanding of your own physical limitations and you know what you can make your body do. Fire eating is the same way. Your body can withstand higher temperatures than you think it can. And using your breath work to carry hot air up and out is a very effective strategy for basically turning your body into its own insulator. Blockhead works because you have a lot of space in your sinus cavities. And if you're careful with your angle, you can line it up just right so that it goes into your sinus cavity and just stops before you hit your skull. I've done blockhead for so long that I can actually get the nail quite far back because I've been doing it since I was 15. I think my skull was still a little soft when I started doing it. So it goes back further than where the end of my sinus cavity is. And I know that because I've seen the pictures. They did the pictures of the inside of my face when I got a sinus infection once. And they said, oh, it's weird. You have a dent at the back of your sinus cavity. And I went, oh, it's weird. I couldn't tell you why.
Who
No
knows?
idea.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm
Yeah.
not going to explain
So
where that came from.
you started at 15 putting a nail into your head.
Yeah, that's when I was the correct amount of stupid to want to do something like that. But though there is one thing that I never, so for me, there has to be a balance between pain and the value of it as an entertainment, right? I don't just want to hurt myself because Someone's gonna love that. I want it to be like a strong piece. And I like blockhead because it's visceral. The way I do it, I do it with needles instead of just nails. I think nails are like really great for like that impact, but I think people tend to have a different kind of relationship with needles, especially after the pandemic. So I love doing it with needles. But for me, sword swallowing was the one where I couldn't quite get over the hump. Like I did it one summer as a street performer. It was in the show for maybe 10 shows, and I never crossed the threshold where it became easier, it became more comfortable. Because the audience could see I was struggling, they weren't perceiving it as an entertainment. So for me, that was one of the ones where I went, you know what? I bet if I keep doing this, it'll get easier. But I don't think it'll get easy enough to justify me trying to turn this into an entertainment. And then since then, I've seen tons of sword swallowing acts that I'm like, well, obviously that one's fantastic. But at the time, I just was like, you know what? This is one step too far for me.
And they all have dents lower in their body, like you do. It's a problem for them. Among your many achievements, you hold the Guinness World Record for the longest duration of holding fire in the mouth, a 2 minute and 1 second feat that I cannot imagine enduring. How did you train yourself to ignore the flames and the pain, which I
So
assume they
mostly
were there?
that's not what that is. Mostly it's like a breathing exercise. That's what you train. You train the consistent breathing. But you're right in that in the actuality, it is very painful. I don't know that there is a way to train yourself to ignore the pain, but when you are kneeling in front of 200 people in a studio audience and the largest TV, like comically large TV cameras, like Flintstone would use these as props, right? These were massive TV cameras. I think that there's just something that kicks into your brain where you go, I am not in my body anymore. I'm outside. I am also an observer. I think a lot of people think, like, oh, I trained for the pain, I trained for the technique. And then in the moment, your body just goes, well, this is what we're doing. This is what we have to survive to get this thing. Okay.
Yep. Your body says, oh, she's doing it again. It wasn't bad enough with the nails and the needles. Now it's flames.
Yeah, we're going to get mad later and give her a sinus infection.
Speaking of being on stage, you've got a persona that I've already mentioned, Lucy Darling, who will be in town. And I believe Lucy is based on old Hollywood luminaries like Mae West, Eartha Kitt, and some Dorothy Parker as well. So tell
Oh,
me
yeah.
about how you created Lucy. What were some of the steps that led to that? Because in a lot of ways, it's sort of an obscure reference. I mean, I'm old, and I was like, oh, that reminds me of, Dorothy Parker was one of the things that came to mind. And then later on, I was like, obviously, Mae West. But how did it all work for you?
I have always been really obsessed with screwball comedies. Bringing Up Baby, What a Way to Go. As far as like What's Up, Doc, even Barbra Streisand, that's still technically like a screwball comedy. And I loved that energy. And I had this idea that like you could probably do that as an improviser. You could do that with an audience member because in so many ways, often the female presenting character is the one doing all of the like joke parts, all the punchline parts of what's going on, which means that like anything can be a setup if you train yourself to receive it as a punchline. And I just love the aesthetic. I'm obsessed with Dorothy Parker. I've been obsessed with Mae West. I love Zsa Zsa Gabor, all these people. And it kind of sat in my brain in like a little container. I do that a lot with these characters. There's characters now that have never been born yet who are sitting in these little boxes, and you add things as you see them. You just kind of collect elements and you put them in the box. And I was looking at this character idea and I was really like looking at it and taking that box out and looking at it over and over again. And then the Christmas before I did it, around that time, December, I think, Zsa Zsa Gabor passed away. And it was on the internet and I was really affected. And I'm very rarely affected by celebrity deaths. My brain isn't wired that way. But there was something about that one in particular that really hurt me. And when I thought about it, I realized, oh, I think she might have been the last one, the last of those women still living who had brought that energy to the world. And I was so upset to think that like there would be a generation of people who would never have access to that. And so the box became the only box I could look at in my brain. And the next 6 months became like, how do I take these elements and embody them in a way that is respectful, but also like modern, bringing it to a new audience, making it different. And I realized the trope that I'm really digging into is the madame, the knowledgeable older lady, that one character that you see in a lot of those screwball comedies. It's not just the ingenue. I'm playing like the older character. And that character, typically in those films, in those narratives, is there to establish status quo, is there to say, y marriage? What? To a pauper? Like that thing, right? And so I realized there'd be such power because that cultural expectation is still built in. There'd be such power in doing that, but then having different values, not having modern values, having more progressive values. And so being able to go, what? Capitalism is such a funny way to twist that. And so those kind of concepts were enough to get it on its feet. And I don't know how to do anything a little bit. So I would thought instead of working on this a little bit at a time, because I was so profoundly sure that this was a good idea, I flew out to Australia and I wrote a 1 hour show. And the first show I did was an hour of material as this character. And it crushed. It was great. And it was definitely the way to do it because I knew even before I did it that it was going to take audiences a little while to like figure out what this is. It wasn't a character that was going to shine in a 5 minute variety spot. I was going to need a show. And it meant also that like I had an hour every night to work on it and to see how people received it and what rubbed them the wrong way. And now that it's been like 8 years I've been doing this character, the thing I'm most proud of is that it's so often a meet and greet. We get like daughters and mothers showing up, or like grandmothers and granddaughters. And it's this cross-generational thing because some people see this as a reference. And some people see this as like fully new and modern because they weren't there and they don't know I Love Lucy. They don't know Carol Channing. They don't know these people. And so this feels so original. For some people, it feels nostalgic. And I can bring those like two generations or three generations or four generations together because for the younger people, it's like sassy, progressive. And for the older people, it's validating their taste.
Yeah, it's funny as you were describing it, I was just thinking back on those performers that I've seen, and I can see where you're picking all that up, like Mae West and Come Up and See Me Sometime, the world's worst impression right there. And
I've heard worse.
so you've got a lot to base it on. You've said that on stage, your characters are in charge. Quote, when Lucy takes over, I'm just a little voice in the back of my head waiting for her to finish. What's the process like getting in, not just creating the character, but every night getting into that character and saying, okay, for the next hour, I'm putting Carissa aside. I'm going to be Lucy. And that's just the way that I'll think that entire time.
It happens kind of automatically. The makeup is like it takes so much time to glue all that stuff to my face. I don't look like that. And then also, there's a lot of sculptural elements to those costumes. I am strapped in and padded out. Like, that is not my body shape. That is not my face. That is not my hair. And so, the process of putting myself away and putting Lucy on inherently is meditative and like puts me into that state. But truthfully, there is like an on switch. Like when the wig goes on, and it only happens if the rest of it's already done. But when the wig goes on, it's very heavy and it changes like literally the center of gravity in my body. And it really feels like that's the moment when it just switches. And now she's in charge. And I feel like the director sitting in the back row of the theater being like, all right, that's an interesting. Like, I'm still making notes. I'm still going, oh, I wouldn't have made that choice. Okay, I guess it was well received. Oh, my co-star did something there. We should think about that. And I'm still like taking notes, but very quietly. The experience is very real. Like, being her, she feels very real in that moment. And it doesn't feel like acting, it feels like just being.
Does the wig coming off, is that your off switch,
Yeah.
or do you have to do, okay, so it's both. So
Yeah,
it's
it's
all
also the
about
switch.
hair.
Yeah, there's a little crossover. Like when the wig first comes off, there's like sometimes a little bit of time. It depends on, like, if I did a two show day, sometimes there's like a little wind down after it, but it really is an on and off switch.
And speaking of your wig, I want to thank you as a former redhead myself. It's impossible to tell. I appreciate anybody who's going out in the world and repping for the redheads because, we don't get enough and no one believes me anymore that I used to be a redhead. It was sort of like yours, but a little bit lighter.
Oh,
So,
wow.
oh, I was a full fiery redhead and all the abuse that goes with that.
I gotta say, it's gotta be way worse being a guy redhead.
Yeah, you get a lot. And then I knew some people from England who introduced me to the gingers have no souls meme or whatever
Oh,
you
yeah.
want to call that. And I'm like, this isn't very nice. So, yeah, but thank you for doing that. You've mentioned a number of times that as you were coming up, you had a lot of help from other magicians and other performers as you were learning your craft. What were some of the most important ways that people helped you?
I'm so overwhelmed with how incredibly lucky I am. Because I think I had the kind of support that is this really fine razor's edge of the exact correct way to mentor people, which is that the people who helped me along the way would go, the answer's over there, but they wouldn't go get it for me. Or they'd go, I'd go, hey, I want to do this thing. And they would know enough about me to go, you know how to do that. You can do that. And so they were very supportive, but I never ever got babied. I never got it the easy way. I was always, if there was any chance I could do it on my own, I was instructed to do it on my own. And it's so valuable to have that because I experience that now when I try to mentor that I recognize it's easier just to do it for somebody.
Yeah.
It is much easier when somebody comes to me for support to just go, here's the answer, or to just go to write the script for them. Because now that part of it's easy for me. And it's way more work to go, well, what do you think? And like hold their hand through the experience. But I was gifted that by so many different people. And it's now my job to put that out in the world. But being on the other side of that, I really, really appreciate how much harder that is, how much discipline that requires, how much patience that requires to figure out what other people are capable of and push them and not just go, I will solve the problem for you because I can see the solution. It's so easy just to go, oh, you just need a bit, but you can't. After, let's make a Pinterest board and decide what a costume should look like and things that take 10 times more work. So for me, that's what I'm so grateful for. And I see other mentors who've worked with other people who did either or. They were either overly doting, and now those people have learned like a little bit of helplessness. And I'm watching them struggle to sort of find their way and build their own style. And then I see the opposite, where people who really had a very light touch in their mentorship. And now those people feel isolated and they had to do everything the hard way. So they're a little further behind than maybe they would have been if somebody had given them a little bit more support.
Well, that is great to know, and I'm glad that you got those mentorships and people were helping you because it's turned out wonderful for everybody in your audience. So,
Yeah.
Carissa Hendricks, thank you very much. I'm really looking forward to you being in Columbus on March 16th and 17th. We'll have ticket information at the website. And have a great day, and don't disappear on us, I guess
That's the
is the,
plan.
yeah, there's your magician joke.
Love it. And one of the things I'm most excited about this show that we're bringing to Columbus is we're not doing this a ton, but this is the show that Sarah Hester Ross and I created for Las Vegas at our residency. And now we're taking it on the road. So I'm particularly excited to come to Columbus because I've been there tons. I volunteer there every year. We were there working, doing the show with Mark at the zoo. And I feel like I know Columbus, and I know that Columbus is very silly. And the show with Sarah is so deliciously silly in body. And so I'm particularly excited to come with the show.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.